This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, Michigan's State Senate passed a bill requiring all law enforcement officers to take training in conflict de-escalation and recognizing bias. The vote to pass this bill was 38-0. Can we just take a moment with that? It has been so rare for all of Michigan's elected leaders to agree on anything. The bill in question was proposed by Ann Arbor area Senator Jeff Irwin, and it actually predated the death of George Floyd, but there is no question the debate was informed by protests against police use of force in several Michigan cities. Jerry Clayton is the sheriff of Washtenaw County. We've spoken to him in the past about training methods to reduce violence. We thought it was a good time to reopen that conversation. Sheriff Clayton, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
First off, one of the incidents that captured public attention so completely last month was a video of one of your deputies punching Shatina L. Grady, who was refusing to leave the scene of a shooting in Apple Ridge, Ypsilanti Township. Your office is investigating the use of force, and I'm guessing you can't comment on an active investigation, but can you tell us anything about what needs to happen in that investigation or your timeline?
Sure. So I can tell you what we've done to this point. So within 12 hours of viewing the video and finding out about the incident, we put the deputy sheriff off on administrative leave. And within 24 hours, we had reached out to the Michigan Sheriff's Association, which provides investigators from various sheriff's offices. So really securing an outside entity to do a criminal investigation of the allegations of excessive force. We have an internal person that does our internal investigations. So he started collecting all the information. So when the external investigators came, they would be prepared. And within 48 hours, I had spoken to our state attorney general, Dana Nessel, and she agreed that she would receive the criminal investigation package from the MSA investigators and make the final determination whether she's going to charge or not.
Looking at this more broadly, can you tell us a little bit about what informs the way law enforcement officials use force?
So although different states may have slightly different versions of subject control, the use of force continuum, they're all, you know, really grounded in a couple of Supreme Court decisions. And it's really around how law enforcement responds to the resistive behavior they get from subjects. So in our subject control use of force policy, which we last updated last year, we wanted to make a distinction between subject control and use of force, because all force is an attempt to control, but all control tactics aren't force. So my presence, how I talk to you, all those are opportunities for me to get compliance and to take care of a lawful objective. And then if I get resistive behavior, then I may have to increase my options to physical controls or using some kind of device like a taser. And the police officer is to take into account what we call the totality of the circumstances. So they have to process all this information while they're interacting with someone and trying to come up with the right kind of outcome. And the last thing, you know, we've added de-escalation. It is mandated de-escalation in our policy to attempt de-escalation as long as it is safe to do so.
Do you think you've learned anything about the fundamental tension between de-escalation and maintaining what deputies see as their need to maintain control at a scene?
You know, when I was going through the police academy, it was a different mindset. We were taught, get into the scene, establish control as quickly as you can, bring a conclusion to the scene, let's move on to the next thing. That's how we were trained. That was the orientation. The basic assumption was the quicker you got in, the quicker you could establish control, the safer everybody was going to be, and we could accomplish our lawful objective. Now what we are learning is, whoa, wait a minute. Speed does not equate to efficiency. Now, because we not only review the actions of the officer, the time they use force, we're looking at the actions that led up to potentially using force. And you build into your policy and you change from a cultural standpoint in the organization is that the value is not speed. The value is how do we interact with people, whoever it is, and they, all of us, come on the other side of that interaction, physically, emotionally, and psychologically, without harm. Now, we're not asking them to rush in. We're telling them, assess the situation from a distance. That distance and time is your friend. To be able to assess whether the person may have a mental health disorder or substance use disorder, they might be in crises. And if they are, they might not be able to understand your lawful directions. And also, is this situation beyond your capacity, beyond your ability to manage? And do you have a lifeline, say maybe a mental health crisis team that can come out and assist you in the process? So that's the pivot that I've seen more than anything else. And, you know, in the policies, it's the sanctity for all human life, not just the police officers, but all human life. And if you start from that perspective, then I think you're more likely to get a better outcome.
If the legislature were looking to you or other sheriffs or police chiefs in the conversations about reform and training that are going on right now, what would you tell them?
So I would tell them, so, you know, this morning I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And part of what I say is, so we always recognize the importance of training, but we don't recognize the connection between training and the organizational and community outcomes that we want. That if we work with the community to establish the outcomes that we want, then we must be sure that we articulate to our staff how they can behave to help get to those outcomes. And then the training comes in play because now we know the knowledge and skills that they need to behave the way they need to behave to get the outcomes. Here's the hardest part. It's about culture. We can't just legislate our way to the kind of relationships that we want, the kind of society that we want. We have to look at the societal culture, the assumptions that we make about people. The organization has to look at its culture. And I could have the best policies and training and evaluation in place, but if the culture of the organization doesn't value life, doesn't understand the service aspect of what we do, then we're not going to be successful.
You know, to that end, there might be people hearing this right now who say, yes, I know that the office went through, you know, has gone through significant training on this, but there's still that video that surfaced last week.
Sure.
I mean, is this a situation where we are ever going to get there?
Yeah, and I would argue that in a lot of places, and our place included, that we're farther along than we were. I got this question in response to my testimony this morning, where it was like, well, look, sure, if we gave you all the money we could to do all the training and you could do all the recruiting and everything, can you guarantee me we'll never have an incident like George Floyd or anywhere else? And the response is no. And the reason is we hire human beings. Human beings we're flawed. Human beings make error. What we try to do in everything that we do, in every profession, we're trying to mitigate risk, right? I cannot guarantee, listen, we have spent 12 years in the sheriff's office working on our culture, our policies, our training, and everything. And I could never say to a resident of Washtenaw County, you'll never have a bad experience with one of our deputies. I'm doing everything to ensure that you don't. And if you do, we'll hold that person accountable for what they did. But we have to have the right, we're trying to mitigate that risk. And the other piece I think is important is it's not just the internal, it's the external. How do we relate to the community? How do they understand who we are and what they do? Are we really co-producing public safety and building strong and sustainable communities in partnership with our community? I think all of that is important.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sheriff Jerry Clayton of Washtenaw County. There are protesters and activists both in the streets and online who advocate defunding the police or in some cases dismantling. They argue that law enforcement just takes up too much tax revenue at the expense of things like social workers, affordable housing, education that would have a long-term impact on public safety. How do you respond to people who say we need to completely reimagine the role of law enforcement in our communities?
I agree. So I've sat on numerous panels, some with the Center for American Progress, some with the Policing Project out of NYU Law School. We have just those conversations, you know, reimagining police. And I always challenge, let's reimagine society, because it's not just about the police. The police is just another example of the challenges we have from a societal standpoint. public, you know, health, food insecurity, housing insecurity, all of those things. So we do have to reimagine police within the framework of reimagining our societal construct. And if in reimagining the police and reimagining societal construct, we're looking at reallocation of dollars, so be it. But as we reimagine the societal construct, we must be very, very clear in terms of what our expectations are for the different units of government. So as you shift funding to other areas, understand you can't hold police to the same expectations that you did before in terms of responding to different situations. I hear all the time, well, the police shouldn't respond to a mental health crisis. You don't get many police professionals that disagree. But we are the ones that are 24/7, 365. So we would be happy to step back and let's have 24/7, 365 medical and mental health professionals that they can respond to some of those things. So I don't believe there's ever going to be an either or. I have acquaintances that are police abolitionists, and they want to work towards that end. And what I say to them is, that's fine. But until we do, we must find a way to work together, share the space, and commit to change and create the kind of future that we want while you're working toward abolishing the police.
In addition to being a public official, you're also an elected official. And our police chiefs are appointed to their positions. Do you think that that accountability to voters makes a difference in operations?
Yeah, actually I do. I talk about this a lot with a couple of folks. I think, we directly report to the people, and I've said this in our county, if I'm going to tell you what we're going to do, try to share our values and outcomes and work with you, but at the end of the day, you have the power. And if you decide that you want someone else to be the sheriff because you think they articulate a different set of values and going to get you a better outcome, then you have every right to do so. Now, saying that, it's the political position, but it shouldn't be political in terms of decision making. So I understand the politics, but I make principle-based decisions. I already know the decisions, some of the decisions that I make, people aren't going to agree with. I can't be such the politician that you can't make principle-based decisions because you're worried about getting unelected. From a chief's perspective, the chief can run the agency, but he or she is still impacted by the politics. And what I tell folks is a chief of police is far more impacted by the politics than I am. Far more. Because they have some discretion, but they still work for an elected body. And if you have a city manager form of government with council members that hire the city manager and hire the chief, and say you have 9 different council members, you may have 9 different perspectives of how police services are delivered or the role that they play. And now the chief has to navigate all those political perspectives to try to serve the community. As a sheriff, I don't have that issue. My job is to be open and engaged, listen to the people, and deliver the services that we say we're going to deliver. And if in our community, I've been in office for 12 years, and one of our major police agencies have had 5 chiefs. So when you talk about continuity of leadership, it may be more stable in a elected capacity than in an appointed capacity.
You alluded to the fact that institutional structures struggle with racism and struggle with internal racism. How have your own experiences as a Black man informed the way that you run your office?
I think that might be one of the best questions I've had since, we've been in this particular space. So I talk about this. I live in both worlds, right? I am 55 years old and I've experienced this world as a 55 years as an African-American male. And that has shaped me tremendously. A grandfather, and I was born in Bessemer, Alabama, so a grandfather that was active in the civil rights movement and told me stories. My wife and I have 3 sons who have to navigate this world. And quite frankly, each conversation we had when they got a license was a scary conversation. They're grown men now, but it's still scary. So that perspective is what motivated me to work for almost 20 years on bias-based policing throughout the country. And when I was fortunate enough to be elected sheriff, that experience has really motivated me to try to create an organization where we're not perpetuating this cycle of discrimination that has existed for over 400 years. Now, it's also given me insight sitting in this police world, where now I can go back to some of my African-American friends and said, yeah, well, we had some stereotypes and unfair views of police officers too. And let me talk to you about the objective of policing and the noble profession and the fact that we hire human beings, and the smaller percentage are the ones that are the problem. But I also talk about the institutional aspect of it, and we got to work to break the cycle.
I feel like I've been asking this question since Rodney King in Los Angeles in the 90s, and obviously it precedes that by decades and decades. But Sheriff, do you think America is approaching a different kind of tipping point in this conversation about use of force?
So people have said that the George Floyd incidents, the straw that broke the camel's back, this is it. But we talked about that with Laquan McDonald, right? We talked about that with Eric Garner. We talked about that with others, that this was the incident and it had a spark and, you know, it wasn't sustained. I'm not sure if this is it. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody can say this is it. Nobody has that crystal ball. I do feel a different energy. I feel a different energy because, you know, you see more law enforcement professionals stepping up and calling out the injustices that exist in our profession, where years ago we were too busy defending the status quo than to call out the fact that, you know what, all these people saying these things can't be wrong. Police officers marching with protesters, kneeling with protesters. There's a different spirit here. And maybe the image of one human being dressed in a uniform, kneeling on the neck of another human being until his life expired, is an image that's seared so firmly in our minds and our hearts that we can't stop until there's actual fundamental change. And I'm hopeful, but I'll say again, this is going to be extremely hard work that requires resilience and stamina and commitment for all parties involved. And I feel a pivot here in Washington County and elsewhere, where we're moving away from blame, not away from holding accountable, but from blame, to now starting to focus on where do we go to start this long process to developing the kind of world and the kind of country that we've always aspired to be.
Jerry Clayton is the sheriff of Washtenaw County. Sheriff, thank you very much for your time today and for all your work. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. That we've always aspired to be.
Jerry Clayton is the sheriff of Washtenaw County. Sheriff, thank you very much for your time today and for all your work. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And that's Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.